This episode of the Sweat Daily Podcast is brought to you by Kansas Athletic Club, a premier facility for fitness in Overland Park, Kansas. At Kansas Athletic Club, the mantra of Sweat Daily is truly put to use with programs such as CrossFit, Epic, personal nutrition, youth training, and sport performance. Our mission is to advance the health and well-being of the individuals in our local community by delivering physical and nutritional services that will lead to a lifestyle without limitations. Interested? Book a free 2-class trial right now. Yes, you heard that right. Free 2-class trial. Do this by going to Kansas Athletic Club. That is ksathleticclub.com and click on the 2-class free trial tab. Whether you're looking to lose weight, gain muscle, prepare for competition, or live as your most healthy and active self, Kansas Athletic Club is the place for you. Kansas Athletic Club, striving for incremental improvement every day.
That is why, if there's one thing I can do with this new business, is just educate everyone that your pelvic floor is the basis of every movement. You cannot train appropriately unless you know how to appropriately contract all these muscles in conjunction with what you're doing.
I'm Patrick Chandler.
I'm TJ Kiblin.
I'm Nick Reyes. And you're listening to the Sweat Daily Podcast.
We are back with another episode of the Sweat Daily. We are on the road. If you follow us on social media, you probably noticed we packed up our bags. We got all of our equipment, our fancy stuff, and we are actually at Encore Therapy and Performance, and we're in North Overland Park. It's like just regular Overland Park.
We're in Johnson County.
Johnson County, yeah. But so we're in the same county. It's not like we traveled state to state, but we're on the road. And like I said, Encore Therapy and Performance with Dr. Kelsey Beach. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Nick is here as well. Say what's up, Nick.
What's going on, guys?
And it's kind of a cool week because this is a topic that we're going to get into that Nick and I know nothing about. And so we brought in the big guns, we brought in the expert. And it's also cool that this week is National Women's Health Week. Mm-hmm. Obviously Mother's Day was this past Sunday. So happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there and expecting mothers, my wife. And so we thought it would be a great idea to have Dr. Kelsey Beach on to talk about women's health, mm-hmm. pelvic floor health, mm-hmm. And just all things that Nick and I know nothing about.
I love that. I love educating people that know nothing about this. It's my favorite.
Yeah, this is an area that's just complete nothingness in my brain. So I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. So first of all, and one thing that's cool is you're Doctor of Physical Therapy.
Yes.
And I did my research. So you graduated from Southwest Baptist.
I did.
No idea what year. Not even going to ask. Don't really care. But we graduated with the same degree. Mm-hmm. But our jobs are vastly different.
Completely different.
Very, very different.
Yes.
So we don't need to get in all the boring stuff about PT school and this and that. But I am a little bit curious, mostly selfishly as a physical therapist, what after school education did you go through to get into this specialization?
So all my training is done through, we have two institutes of learning, two main ones, APTA, Section on Women's Health, and then Herman and Wallace. And I am all Herman and Wallace trained. So my last clinical in PT school was a women's health pelvic PT. So that's where I really got my feet wet, learning about what a pelvic floor physical therapist did, because I went to a Baptist college. We did not talk about any of this. We had one like 10-minute lecture on pelvic floor anatomy, and then that was it. And it was like, close the books. We don't want to talk about this.
That might be more than what we got at ours.
I know.
Like it was like, I think they like were like, these are the pelvic floor muscles. Honestly, I was like, anatomy was like my favorite class. And like, I don't even know the names of the muscles. And I'm like, I should know this. Like I'm a doctor of this.
Is it just assumed in school that if you want to learn more, you'll go on to further education about it? Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
We're seeing a lot more schools have adjunct professors come in and teach about it. But we're still not, there's not a lot in it. And so the institute of learning that I chose was Herman Wallace. Mm-hmm. And I came right out of PT school into pelvic. I didn't do anything else, which was good and bad. And so I've always done Herman and Wallace courses, as I've said. But as I've gotten further in my career, I've actually branched out and done more ortho-specific classes to the pelvic floor, which has been amazing for my clinical knowledge, my clinical skills and everything.
But, and when you say ortho specific for somebody that might not understand, what is exactly does that mean?
So I've done Gary Gray.
Okay.
Function like female chain reaction stuff. So really getting away from just the specific pelvic floor muscles and seeing how they integrate into the whole entire body. My first couple years as a pelvic PT, I was so focused on pelvic floor. That's all I looked at. And then once I started going in a more broader global spectrum, I became a better clinician and my patients started getting better. And that's where it was a little bit of a downfall going straight into pelvic after PT school, because I didn't have like a good ortho base, but taking on that knowledge has really helped me tremendously help patients and help myself as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet that's gotta be really, really cool when that like light bulb clicks on and you're like, granted, there's probably a little bit where you're like, man, if I only knew this 2 years ago, how many more people I could have helped. But, the fact that you're learning and continuing to grow is really cool. So why pelvic floor? Why was this so important to you in the first place? 'Cause you said you knew pretty much right out of school and you went right into it. Yes. So why this?
Okay. So this is my favorite question. Because when I started PT school, my first thought when I sat down was, I'm going to become an orthopedic specialist, move back to Kansas City, and work with the sports teams. And this is because I had been through rehab myself. I came from a family that actually has blown out all their ACLs, blew out mine, been through rehab, was a huge athlete growing up. But I took musculoskeletal class, and I hated it. I thought it was the most boring thing. My mind of what an orthopedic PT did was get a protocol from a doctor, follow it, and then you're done. And then I started learning about pregnancy in PT, and it was really neat because you had a lot more autonomy. You had a decision to create your own plan of cares. You didn't, people weren't referring for this. So I had an opportunity to see a patient, create my own plan of care, and then move forward. So in school, all my projects became pregnancy and incontinence related. And I actually started teaching a class at the hospital to pregnant women about pelvic PT. And these women would come in, and my first question I asked, I said, do you know what your pelvic floor is? And all these women would shake their heads and be like, no. And in my mind, I'm like, this is where your baby's coming out. Like, how do we, why are we not educating women on this? So I did the class through that. And then I did a clinical rotation in it down in Florida. And that's when I got the big exposure to what pelvic PT was. And I really learned off the bat that pelvic PT is one-on-one, private session, in an environment that you create. I'm a huge introvert. And so being able to create that space with my patient was really important to me. So I followed that trail and just have never looked back. And so, yeah. So then here I am 10 years later.
I would not have guessed that you're an introvert.
Huge introvert. But this is my comfortable space.
So yeah.
Like it's dim lighting.
This is cozy.
It's cozy is the right word. If it's not cozy, I'm uncomfortable. Like
we might actually be asking to come use this as a recording studio more often.
It's pretty perfect setup.
It feels pretty at home right
Honestly,
now.
Honestly, you probably could. Like Mika, who owns this space, would be like, oh my gosh, yes.
And then we could get all of your colleagues on and yeah, that'd be great.
But they would love that.
The question, the follow-up question I have after that answer is one of the questions that your patients was asking, which is, what is the pelvic floor?
Yes. So this is a great question. So the pelvic floor is the floor of the pelvis, and it's actually three layers. It's a superficial layer, a middle layer, and a deep layer. I'm not going to name all the muscles because they're just big words that really don't matter. But there are three layers of muscle that active. So a supportive range, a structural range, and a sexual range. And we look at that for a magnitude of what we're treating symptoms for, bowel, bladder, sexual dysfunction. The interesting thing about that pelvic floor is that it then feeds into the whole pelvic realm, meaning we have an ATLA ligament down there that connects to the obturator internus, which feeds the hips, which controls all that movement. And then it also feeds into the deep glutes, which feed up the chain. So the pelvic floor is this beautiful hammock of a supportive structure that creates kind of the base of support for everything that's moving from it, hips, back, and then feeding up the chain into the core, arms, everything.
Right. So it's almost like the keystone for the hips. And coming from a functional exercise background, how often, gosh, if you had to ask me how many times a day I mentioned to somebody that was performing a squat or a deadlift or just any type of exercise that I told them something about their hips, whether it's, you know, glute, hip extension, you know, squat depth, something like that, where it's like, this could be actually a pelvic floor issue.
Tremendously. Yes. Okay. And I think that's the reason I've grown to love pelvic more and more and more every year I'm a clinician is I'm learning how it's so much more connected to the body. And I had hip surgery last May. I had an FAI repair with a labrum repair. Mm-hmm. And my symptoms were not anything an ortho PT would have picked up because, getting candid here, I had a lot of rectal pain. And when you hear rectal pain connected to your hip, you think, I don't really know where this is going. Yeah,
you just kind of get, you're like confused and kind of scared and you're like, 100%, I don't know what that means. Yeah.
My obturator was so on fire mm-hmm. because of my hip dysfunction and it was causing obturator to feed into my pelvic floor, feeding into rectal discomfort.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, there's all the nerves that are in there.
Oh my gosh.
And there's like a million nerves.
So many.
That got really overwhelming in school where I'm like, nerves are weird in general.
Agreed.
Like just in extremities yes. and things like that. And then you get into pelvic floor nerves and you're like, oh boy.
I call it the Grand View Triangle. Like anyone who's a local from here, like, you know what the Grand View Triangle is. And that is like the pelvis is the Grand View Triangle of muscle, vascular system, and nerves.
That is going to stick with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's actually
Grand View Triangle.
That's a great way that we as coaches, and it maybe is a little bit more of a sensitive topic for women hearing from men. Like I can't just really maybe walk up to somebody that's newer to class and be like, you really need to work on your pelvic floor and like look them in the eye and then say that. But if I walk up and say, you need to work on your Grand View Triangle,
boom,
it maybe takes a little bit of the
icebreaker.
Yeah. It's a little bit of the icebreaker. They're like, what are you talking about?
Agreed.
And then, yeah, I'm stealing that just like so you know. So,
yep.
But we'll trade, you can trademark it. And then every time we mention it, you get some royalties or something. So, but no, I think that's a great example. So let's dive in a little bit to like these three different layers of the pelvic floor.
Okay.
And can you talk specifically, doesn't really matter if you want to work in to out or out to in, but just explain a little bit more what each does.
Of course. So the first layer of the pelvic floor is going to be kind of this triangular structure that goes around clitoris, urethra opening, vaginal opening, rectum, anus. And this layer is really integral for leakage because when these muscles contract, they're responsible for the closing mechanism of a pelvic floor contraction.
Okay.
So Kegel, you'll hear me call it a pelvic floor contraction. But this first layer is responsible for the closing. And this layer is important because if we have leakage and we're not acknowledging that this muscle layer has to close, we're not kind of capping off that urethra. It's also going to be really important for sexual function because with vaginal penetration, this muscle layer, if it's too tight, it's going to inhibit the way that insertion needs to happen. I wish we were recording. I make really good hand gestures. So
we'll draw like a really rough model of this somehow. I don't know if we'll be allowed to, but
probably not. But this muscle layer is going to be really important for any of that vaginal penetration. Now, where I really like to also branch off is this muscle layer is so important for athletics because anytime we take the legs in more of a, when we take them out of neutral, and put them in a more of a hip splay or a abducted position, this muscle layer is most vulnerable because we're taking that vaginal opening and we're opening it just a little bit more and can cause a huge problem. And so a lot of times when I have women athletic come in and I asked about their lifting, we really work in positions that challenge that pelvic floor to open it a little bit more and be mindful of the close mechanism. So that's the first layer. Second layer of the pelvic floor is sphincter muscles that relate to the bladder. This muscle layer I don't work on as much and I kind of throw it into the third layer, but it's going to be responsible communicating with the bladder function. So women who have what we call urge incontinence usually have a dysfunction in this muscle layer. Third layer is going to be the levator ani plate, which lines more that pelvic bowl. So this is the muscle layer that we think of more with pelvic floor contractions because it's the biggest muscle structure of the three, has the most muscle fiber contractions. So we're going to feel it most. And it's the lift of that pelvic floor contraction. So anytime we talk pelvic floor, we want to think with the contraction, are we getting the close mechanism and the lift mechanism?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And those are the three layers in a nutshell.
Man, that is gosh. And like I said, I literally went to school for this stuff and it's like just flying straight over my head, but it's super informative. And I think so many people are going to benefit from this. I do wish we had the models, not necessarily the models that you were talking about, but like just being able to maybe that's something we'll research is if we can find some good pictures and videos and things like that.
Yes. You probably have great references. Pictures. Yes.
So next question. Is there one of the three levels that has more dysfunction than others, or is it pretty variable?
It's variable, and it all depends on what the dysfunction is. When we think leakage, we typically think more third layer, but a lot of times I'll have women come in that have a completely strong third layer, but that first layer is just not firing at all. Mm-hmm. If we have women who have vaginal deliveries, we see sometimes a more dysfunction in that first layer because that's where we tear during vaginal deliveries. And if there's a dysfunction there, that muscle layer is not going to contract the way it needs to. So depending on the dysfunction, depending on the symptoms, every layer is going to be different.
Makes sense.
But typically third layer, since it is going to be the biggest muscle structure, it's kind of, I'm trying to think of like a, I'm not going to even going to go there because orthopedic's not my skill set, but like when we think, nope, I'm not even going to do it. Not going there.
Dang, I was going to wait you out and see if you'd just keep going. But
I'm not. I know my skill set.
I think that this is actually a good, I was going to save all the listener questions for the end, but this one's just a natural segue because you mentioned leakage. And one of the most common questions that we got was, performing double unders with jump rope and having leakage. And this might be before or after having children. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to prevent that? Is that something that you can fix?
100%. I don't like to use the word fix. I tell patients we can improve your body biomechanics to hopefully lessen the severity of it. But with double unders, jumping is kind of the last exercise that I always progress patients to because it is the most intense. It's the heaviest kind of compression down on the pelvic floor. But the way that we do it is, so with a double under, we have to look, okay, what is all moving? We have legs moving, arms moving, core's moving, and they're moving in an up and down fashion, kind of only staying in really one plane of motion. So with that, we break down the whole motion of it. And so a double under coming into clinic with me is going to look as simple as getting used to using the pelvic floor and standing. And then we might do one small, what we call a bunny hop, a single leg one, a double leg one, then we'll progress it forward. Then we're going to add the arms in too. And so a double under rehab honestly could take 2 or 3 visits, breaking down every motion that you're going to go through. And then we're going to speed it up each time and just break everything down and teach you how to use the whole pelvic core system with it. And also the whole fascial plane system, because when we're doing a double under, arms are coming up, coming over. We really have to think, when you use your pelvic, like a lot of patients don't think that this is going to be a big effect on their pelvic floor, but the whole fascial plane coming from the shoulder down, crossing the obliques, crossing that TA into the pelvic floor is going to be huge. And if they can't even perform that, that could be the biggest hindrance of it, is why they're having leakage.
Right. It's literally like trying to run before you can walk.
Exactly.
It just doesn't, it won't work.
And it's a beautiful progression up to it, but finding in that activity, where is the fault? And so peeling back those layers with the patient and saying, if we lift our arms, did you have leakage? If we jump, did you have leakage? If you just move your legs, do you have leakage? Finding where that is, teasing it out, and then building their rehab protocol to match that dysfunction.
Awesome. That's physical therapy right there, right?
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's just a logical approach where you find the issue and we're going to work through and work on step-by-step correcting it.
Yes. Right? And I think a lot of times when they hear double under, they think, oh, I just can't jump anymore. It's my moms and trampolines. Like those things like are just pee makers. And double unders can be too, because it's this quick repetitive motion and it's fatiguing the pelvic floor, but also making sure the pelvic floor is coordinating to the position that we want it to.
Yeah. Awesome. That's great to hear.
Is this something that's worse under fatigue?
Yes. These muscles fatigue fast. Just because like every other muscle of the body, we have slow twitch, fast twitch, and we have to train the pelvic floor in that. And fast, I mean, they're small muscle fibers too. And so they're not going to have as much endurance capability. And so building that endurance is going to be important. But they'll fatigue out a lot because most of the time patients aren't working these muscles. You know, if you have a patient come in and they're like, oh, I'm leaking with a double under, and you go to them and you ask like, well, how's your grand view triangle? And they say, I've never worked it before. you're going to have a higher incidence of fatigue happen. And so just training that either in that slow twitch or fast twitch motion is going to be important.
So let me ask you this. What's, you know, if I wanted to train right now, mm-hmm. how, what's like the first exercise that you would say, like, this is my go-to? And obviously we'll throw in the caveat of it depends, because that's what every good therapist
depends.
Says.
It always depends.
But if you just have your one that you're like, I'd give this to almost every single person, what type of exercise would that be?
So every single patient that comes through clinic, we learn the first day, we learn two ways to contract the whole pelvic core system. So when I say pelvic core, I'm thinking first layer of pelvic floor, mm-hmm. all the way up to diaphragm.
Okay.
And so the first thing that we always do is learn how to close the pelvic floor, lift the pelvic floor, turn on the deep core, TA, mm-hmm. and then also turn on obliques. I don't do a lot of rectus training just because it's not necessarily going to vibe best with what we're working on. We're thinking more deep. So once we isolate out all four of those, we then learn how to contract them as one, and we learn how to bottom load it, meaning we start from the pelvic floor working up to the rib stacking, mm-hmm. and then we also top load it, meaning we start rib stacking, go all the way down. And so that is every single patient in my clinic learns how to do that day one, no matter what the dysfunction is, whether it's leakage, prolapse, bowel dysfunction, sexual dysfunction. We have to learn how to coordinate our bodies, because it also then goes along with our diaphragm and breathing techniques.
That's, I wish I knew more about the pelvic floor. We're learning now though.
It's amazing. I love it.
Cause I'm just thinking too, you know, again, from the coaching perspective and from a more musculoskeletal mm-hmm. physical therapist perspective, like, you know, we talk about core stability. We've had podcasts talking about core stability and bracing. And yeah, I'm sure you've heard of the analogy of think of your core as a soda can or yeah. something along that line. Yeah. It's a cylinder. And, you know, we tend to be really, really good at hitting the top of that can
yes.
and the sides of the can.
Yep.
But it's not going to hold anything in if there's no bottom.
No.
And that's just such a huge flaw. I'm thinking, so how many people that are lifting heavy weights and performing Olympic lift, where it's like, if you just fix this little key, where would you be?
Tremendously. And that is why, if there's one thing I can do with this new business, is just educate everyone that your pelvic floor is the basis of every movement. Mm-hmm. You cannot train appropriately unless you know how to appropriately contract all these muscles in conjunction with what you're doing. And I have so many women that come in to see me, and when I ask them to perform a contraction, I don't tell them what I want. I say, you show me what this looks like. And so many people suck in their bellies. Like I was taught in PT school, just pull your belly button to your spine. I'm like, well, what is that doing? Like, that's right. not doing anything. Like, that's just vanity.
Right.
That's all that is. And so appropriately learning how not to just suck in your belly button, but use your muscles is so important. And so many people have no idea how to do it.
Do you always start people laying down, standing up, on their side? How does that work?
I prefer laying down supine, laying on your back, just because it's A, most comfortable. So my progression is going to be laying down, sitting, standing, because in that sense, we're not having gravity against us laying down, mm-hmm. not having pelvic organs. Pelvic organs are heavy. I mean, especially postpartum, like my postpartum moms whose uterus are still coming down in size, that thing is heavy. So honoring that. Then we transition to the sitting just to get used to what gravity is going to feel like, but still having a good base of support under that pelvic floor. Then we go standing.
Awesome. Normal transition or mm-hmm. Understandable transition. Mm-hmm. And that actually is a good segue, I think, because you mentioned postpartum for some more questions.
Yes.
And one of the questions is, should all women be doing pelvic floor exercise throughout their entire life? And if so, why?
Yes. Every woman... I kind of have this joke that if I could see women at milestones, I would want to see them at puberty just to say, here's what the heck's about to happen. Like, here's how this whole muscle structure works with your organ changes. Here's how your body's going to change. I like to see them then when they get pregnant, just to educate on, here's the postural changes that this uterus is going to have on your body. I like to see them then postpartum and then menopause. And so asking, should we do pelvic floor exercises? Yes, but a pelvic floor exercise is going to look different for every stage of life. You know, in the beginning of pregnancy, we're really working on the strengthening component, working on concentric contractions. And then towards the end, late third trimester, we're working on all eccentrics. We're getting that body ready to push a baby out, which is hard work. Like, holy moly, I just went through it so unprepared. And I've even been working in this for 10 years, but really working on the eccentrics. And then come postpartum, we're changing gears. We're going concentric again. So I think every woman should see a pelvic PT just to learn what the heck happens to their body at different phases of life and how to honor that change and functionally work towards their needs.
Yeah, I'm nodding my head, and in my mind, I'm actually thinking like, I'm going to be booking an appointment for my wife with you once we finish this. So just be ready for that.
I will.
Next question, and great answer, by the way. So does pelvic floor PT, and this is, you kind of answered it a little bit, so I'll let you run with it where you'd like to, but does pelvic floor PT just apply to women before and after pregnancy?
No, not at all. Every phase of life. Mm-hmm. Women, I mean, women and men too, because everyone has a pelvic floor. And just as we train different parts of our body, we need to bring awareness to this pelvic floor and train it the way that we need to meet our goals. So pregnancy and postpartum is the reason that's kind of the most thought of with pelvic PT is because that's one of the biggest changes a woman's body is going to go through in that time. So that's kind of where we think about it. And babies come out of vaginas, pelvic floor treats vaginas. So that's where we gear it most. But it is one of the most integral times to see pelvic PT, but it's not the only time. And I know in other countries too, 6 to 12 weeks is mandated pelvic PT after birth.
Wow.
And paid for by the country.
Wow.
I know.
We're behind.
Yeah. We were actually just talking about how not well set up our system is to, you know, be conducive to parents, especially mothers.
Yes. Oh,
I don't know. That might be a whole other podcast.
Oh, don't even get me started on that.
Yeah. We chat for that 20 minutes on the ride over.
So next question.
Yes.
And I think this flows great, is what are ways that women can prevent pelvic floor issues after birth? And then once they have given birth, how can they recover maybe quickly or more quick than what you would expect?
So my first piece of advice is honor what happened to your body. Like, whether you pushed out a child vaginally or had it taken out cesarean, you go through a huge change, and the first 30 days should be fully resting and honoring what happened, listening to your body, letting the trauma, I don't want to use the word trauma, but letting the changes of what happened to your body resonate within your body and listening to it. So kind of the first step is relax, let your body rest. Starting a pelvic floor contraction immediately after birth does not set you up for any more success as starting it at 6 weeks. And then after kind of, usually the 6 weeks marks is when we start going again with rehab, but kind of that 6 week mark is start assessing, what's my posture look like? What's my breathing look like? Am I connecting my pelvic floor to my diaphragm? And just gently starting to turn those muscles on and then turn them off. We're not doing max contractions at 6 weeks postpartum. We're not even close to that. And then functionally listening to what your body's telling you in different positions. I know with my labor and delivery, as I said, my mind was blown and I couldn't do a pelvic floor contraction for almost 8 weeks. And I had to honor that. I had to listen to it, but I had to kind of almost mentally imagine that muscle contracting with my core. But I could top load my pelvic floor, meaning I could use my core to turn on that pelvic floor more in a passive way. And so doing that, and then start using our core and combining all that in a functional manner as to what I've always said, to what your goals are. And so I don't like to say, how can I recover quicker? Because like, quick isn't necessarily a goal, but how can I recover more effectively would just listen to what your body's telling you in its functional deficits and break that down and move towards that in your rehab.
Awesome. So I have one last question that's pelvic floor related, and then a couple more that are slightly different. We can get into, you know, different topics that are similarly related. Ooh, that's a tough word for me. But the last pelvic floor specific question is, how would we know if we could benefit from pelvic floor physical therapy?
This is a trick question, because my answer is yes.
Are you living and breathing?
Yes. Everyone benefits from pelvic floor awareness, just as if like, you know, would you benefit from hip strengthening? 100%. Like, yes, you're going to benefit. Like, and it kind of even, one thing that I have a lot of patients come in and tell me, and I've worked with high level patients. I've worked with CrossFitters. I've worked with marathoners. I've worked with people who are just hellbent that they know everything. Coming in and just learning about your body is one thing that all my patients always tell me. That they say, I learned more about my pelvic floor than seeing years of doctors for this dysfunction that I've had. And every patient that comes through my door, we break out the anatomy books. I show you pictures just to really help you understand. And so the best benefit is just learning about your body and how this small, tiny little three layers of muscles is the most integral part of all your movement, because it's going to move with every single motion that you do.
Love it. I think that's the best way that you can possibly answer that for sure. So I do want to transition just slightly, and I it's not even really a different topic. It's okay. Another question, but it's not necessarily specifically pelvic floor related. And I'm going to read this one word for word because it's from one of our listeners, and I think she'll get a kick out of it. So I have mad diastasis, bro. Can this be improved without surgery? Also, are there movements that we should modify to prevent it from worsening? And that was a quote.
I love this question because diastasis is, I love working with diastasis, and the internet is effing flooded with these fit Instagram influencers are like, pay $300 and I'll fix your diastasis. Like, that is such bullshit. I hate it. And diastasis can completely be managed with an assessment by a trained professional to assess the width, the depth, the patterning, the coordination. So many parts go into diastasis, but it can completely be managed. And back in the day, we always learned, like, you have to close the gap, close the gap, close the gap, close the gap. We've changed that, and now we're minding the gap. Diastasis, every woman is going to have a diastasis around her third trimester of pregnancy, because the way that the baby grows, abdominals have to give space to that. And that fascia is going to stretch. And kind of the way I teach diastasis is we're teaching the muscles to honor the fascia better. It's the fascia that takes the biggest grunt, not the muscles. The muscles are going to come back, but that fascia layer, that connective tissue layer, we can't stitch it back up with rehab, but we can teach the muscles how to properly engage to mind the gap. And so I don't even know if I'm answering all of her questions, but
no, I think you're doing a great job. And yeah, just, I guess, what kind of movements or exercises would you say to help, you know, mind that gap? What is your, like,
working the body in all three planes of motion, sagittal, frontal, and transverse. Transverse plane is actually one of my favorite planes to work the core in. And I think it's one of the most neglected planes of motion. We always think, like, standard crunches, standard sit-ups, working in that one plane, and then getting that rotational piece is going to be huge to A, get the obliques firing appropriately. A lot of women, not necessarily women to categorize, but a lot of people are not typically using that oblique plane. And making sure we're doing that, making sure we're getting that deep core, which is going to be responsible for kind of that midline contraction, and not worrying about your six pack. Like, I tell all my women, like, your rectus abdominis is, it's your designer handbag. It is the muscle layer that we put a lot of work into to show off. Our deep core, that TA and those obliques, those are our wallets. We can't leave the house without it. That designer bag you don't always need. That wallet you always need. And so making sure that you're working in that rotational plane, getting that deep core, and being more mindful of the gap, I think is the best. Now, we do have some women that come in that diastasis, it's a 3-4 finger. They're not minding the gap. They might be a perfect surgical candidate. And I've seen some really successful surgical candidates from diastasis. And I love that. Like, knowing their limit and honoring that is so important. But then in kind of the CrossFit world, in the higher functioning weightlifting world, posture is huge to me, because the minute we kind of unstack the ribs and pelvis, those muscle layers are going to be at an non-optimal firing position. And then no matter how strong you are, you're not going to be able to cross those fibers the way you need to mind that gap.
Gosh, it's like you do this for a living or something.
It's weird, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just over here just soaking it all in, taking notes and learning.
Well, actually, and Nick, I was going to say, I feel like I'm hogging the mic a little bit. So if there's any questions, make sure that you jump in. But
I'm all good. I actually love the analogies. You're like a queen of analogies.
I'm a queen of analogies. I love it. Like, I get so much props from the gals here, the mental health gals here. They're like, the way that you can just analogy the whole body to everything that's going on but people relate to that. Like,
I learned a lot with the designer handbag and wallet analogy.
That's one of my favorites.
That is a good one.
And let me tell you what, women relate to that shit. They're like, yep, I don't carry that Coach bag everywhere, but I take my wallet everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm still a fan of the Grand View Triangle on that one.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
Outside of Kansas City, nobody's really going to understand that. So I think we just have a couple more questions. And again, we'll kind of shift gears a little bit. But again, I'm going to get a little bit selfish and just say, is pelvic floor PT just for women's health, or are there things that you do to help men?
Answer the first question. No, it's not just for women. I always err on this. 99.9% of the population has a pelvic floor. I'm sure there's someone out there who does not have one, and I do not want to offend them, but everyone has a pelvic floor. And so men benefit tremendously as well. The clinic I used to be at, I was actually one of the main clinicians that saw men. And we would see men a lot for pain and urinary leakage. Those are kind of the two main things that we see them for. Men are hard to get through to on pelvic dysfunction, because pelvic dysfunction alone carries a very heavy cloak of shame. It's not something that we're sitting down and talking to our friends about. You know, you guys aren't going to your friends and be like, man, my right testicle really hurt during that workout. How'd yours feel?
Right.
And women aren't going to their friends and being like, hey, you know, I'm having a lot of pain during sex. Are you? So dysfunction of this carries a very heavy cloak of shame, and men's is just a little bit thicker. And getting them to be comfortable with their dysfunctions and not thinking, oh, I'm just gonna man through this, is really difficult. But I will see a lot. I used to see a lot of men for testicular pain, which is huge in the athletic world, because a lot of testicular pain comes from oblique dysfunction. And really unwinding that and working up the whole entire chain was tremendous in seeing them repair their symptoms. But we have men that have diastasis as well. You have men that come in that have had either something from their childhood, a congenital dysfunction, they lost a lot of weight, they have a diastasis. We see a lot of post cancer patients for prostates. Mm-hmm. So prostatectomies, that surgery that you have on the pelvic floor for it, is really difficult on it. So we'll see men coming in for leakage and bowel dysfunction. So everyone has a pelvic floor. Like I said, 99.9% of the people have a pelvic floor. So it's appropriate for everyone at every stage of life.
Any other symptoms for men? Because, you know, most of us are pretty ego driven and we tend to go like, oh, well, there's nothing quote unquote wrong with me, therefore I'm not going to actually make an appointment. Would, besides, you know, testicular pain and mm-hmm. some of those, are there any other symptoms that would actually get through to us hard-headed skulls?
Rectal pain.
Okay.
That always gets people's eyes just like, oh, that didn't feel good.
Right.
So rectal pain, testicular pain, perineal pain. I've seen a handful of male cyclists, women cyclists is horrible on the pudendal nerve. So we'll see a lot of pudendal. I mean, any itching, burning, stinging, that's going to be all nerve related. And then even just low abdominal pain. We'll see a lot of guys that had sports hernias that scar just never healed quite right. I mean, even dry needling that scar to unwind that fascia around it can really heal around that area and any of the symptoms going down.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I had never even considered sports hernias. That's such a common thing that I've, seen, and people are like, well, you know, I had a sports hernia, but I don't really think this is right. It's like, hold on a second. Like,
yeah.
it always throws me off when I'm working with a client or patient and they're like, well, I had this, but I don't think it's really related. And I'm like,
oh, sports hernias.
Rewind it.
Yeah. Sports hernias need a ton of manual work done on them. I'm going to share one small story. Years ago, I was seeing a young guy. He was a first year PT student for a sports hernia that was giving him pelvic pain and testicular pain. And we were doing some dry needling on it, and we were doing like a fascial dry needle on it. So I tap the needle and I just twist it. And what you're doing is wrapping up like the fibroblasts and the collagen and then helping them unwind appropriately. And the needle got stuck and I could not get it out. And mind you, it's always a good sign when you have a needle tenting, meaning you're having the skin kind of pull up with it. I could not get this needle out. The handle of the needle came off. And I'm sitting, and luckily this young guy is like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen, dude. I had to get a pair of pliers.
No.
That's literally what I was going to ask you.
Because the connective tissue from his sports hernia scar was so wound up, it grabbed my whole needle.
Holy That's crap. Insane.
Yeah. Was he a lot better after that?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm guessing it probably took a little bit more needling too, if it was that bad.
Tremendous amount. Yeah. But it was just, I told him, I was like, I don't think I could have done this to any other patient but you. And he's like, this is the coolest thing. I'm going to tell all my friends.
You're like, please don't tell that many people.
Yeah. But. I was like, and I think I want to get certified in dry needling. I was like, you probably should.
Yes. So that actually gives, you know, I have another thought here, and I'm trying to think of the right wording because I don't want it to be, you know, that sounds like a crazy story. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're not going to break any client's trust or anything like that. But what are some of like the strangest things that people have come to you with? And I don't mean strange in a bad way, just things where people ask you a question and you're like, well, I was not expecting that question.
You know, I will honestly say I've only been shocked once in clinic, and it was a woman who was reaching for it, and she said something about having sex with monkeys. That was the only time. That was the only time. And I just let that go over
You were
head.
Just like, yep. This can't be real. Yep. Let's just I'm not
even,
ignore
I
that.
Act like she didn't even say anything, right. But strange isn't something, a word that I would use. But one thing that I hear a lot of is just trauma stories. And one thing that I pride myself on as a clinician is I've worked side by side mental health providers for the last probably 7 years of my career. And I'm very trauma comfortable. So I have a lot of women that come in with childhood abuse, with rape, with any spectrum of abuse. And hearing those stories breaks my heart, but I'm also so thankful that I have, as a clinician, created a comfortable enough space for these women to tell their stories. Mm-hmm. And I've had women come in that have said, I've never told anyone this. I've never told any provider that I've been seeing that I was raped 4 years ago. And I'm so just, I'm just so happy that I can create this space for them, because the minute we get to that trauma that they've gone through, we can unwind their symptoms so much more. And letting these women know that sometimes their first session with me in pelvic PT is we sit down for 1 hour and I let you cry and I let you have the floor. I tell all my patients that their therapy sessions are theirs, and whatever they want to talk about, whatever they want to do, I'm going to listen to, and they're almost going to guide me on what we need to do. And sometimes that's just talking and being heard, because a lot of these women who have gone through pain, and men, no one's taking the time to listen to them. They go to a doctor's appointment that they get 5 minutes, and the doctor's like, well, I don't really know what's going on. Here's a vaginal Valium and an antidepressant. Good luck.
Yeah.
I don't have nothing for that other than I love it. It's such a great approach to health and mental well-being. I absolutely love that.
It's incredibly powerful, and I think that it just speaks to how, you know, easy it is for people to talk to you, mm-hmm. and how good good you are at what you do. I think that is, the sign of somebody that's able to make somebody feel so comfortable that, you know, they're willing to dig into those deep emotions. Like you said, that nobody's ever, I've never said this before.
Exactly.
And I think that speaks volumes to anybody out there listening where, you are not alone in this, unfortunately, for a lot of people. But, being able to talk about it and share, there are avenues to help, like coming to see Dr. Kelsey. And there are so many good providers and therapists out there that can help you with this stuff.
Mm-hmm. A lot of reactionary speed in medicine, not a lot of proactive, true listening and understanding. Yes. So that's a breath of fresh air. And absolutely
agreed.
Obsessed with that approach.
Absolutely. So I think the last question I got for you is, if we switch spots and you were interviewing you, not me interviewing you, what's the one question I forgot to ask?
Oh, I don't even know. You put me on the spot. I wasn't prepared for
this
one.
I didn't prep you on that one.
But I think actually what to expect on your first visit. That is the question everyone usually always has. And a first visit with me looks like you coming in, sitting down, and you telling me however long of a story you want. And as I said just prior, that might take a whole hour, that might take 10 minutes. But once we get your full history, then what we're going to do just an ortho screen. We're going to look at hips, back, core, just to kind of rule any dysfunction in or out of those. And then with the patient's consent, I do an internal pelvic floor assessment. So pelvic PTs, we are the one group of PTs that we are trained to do internal pelvic floor assessments. So with that, it's just a one-digit internal exam testing that third layer, second layer, first layer for pain, and then seeing how the pelvic floor functions alone and then functions with the diaphragm and with the core. And that's typically what a first assessment looks like with me. But I tell all the patients, if you're are so shocked that we have to do an internal assessment and you want to do that day, fine, we don't do it. As I said, patient guides and I kind of follow. But that would be the first appointment's always the scariest, and it's talking, me getting your consent to do the assessment, and then we go from there.
Awesome. So if somebody wants to set up something with you, how do they go about doing that?
They can get on my website to the contact me and fill out that, or they can call me, text me, and everything's on my website for them to access me. They can Instagram me, they can get a hold of me however they want.
Right. And you're on Instagram, Encore?
Encore Therapy KC.
KC. Okay. Mm-hmm. Good. Just wanted to make sure I got that right. Yeah. Well, Dr. Kelsey, thanks for joining us.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Gosh, this was so good. We're going to have to have you back at
Please
some point.
Please do. I could talk pelvic floor all day long.
Yeah. We will get so many more questions after people listen to this.
Good.
So
I love questions.
Again, as always, everybody, make sure that you subscribe. Actually, it's not even subscribe anymore, I don't think, on Apple. I think you follow on Apple Podcasts now. It's changed up. So, because people thought you had to pay to subscribe. You don't have to pay. It's completely free. Listen all you want. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Look us up on Instagram at Sweat Daily Podcast. We're on Facebook now if you're looking for us. And as always, Sweat Daily.
So we have Mother's Day, maternal mental health, masturbation, the good, three M's.
Good to know.
The big three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big three.
And then women's health
is four.
Goes to that way. Yeah. Goes, so we start W and then we rotate down to the M.
Gotcha. Just so you know, I am recording on that. So we got that mixed in.
That is
so we'll cold open it, but,